ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕਾ ਖਾਲਸਾ, ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕੀ ਫਤਿਹ। ਸਤਵੰਤ ਕੌਰ ਬਾਏ ਭਾਈ ਵੀਰ ਸਿੰਘ ਜੀ। ਚੈਪਟਰ 1। ਪਲ ਛੁਟਕੀਓ ਬੰਧਨ, ਪਰੇ ਕਛੁ ਨਾ ਹੋਤ ਉਪਾਏ, ਕਹੋ ਨਾਨਕ ਅਬ ਓਟ, ਹਰ ਗਜ ਜਿਉ ਹੋ ਸਹਾਏ। ਮੀਨਿੰਗ, ਮਾਈ ਪਾਵਰ ਇਜ਼ ਸ਼ੈਟਰਡ ਐਂਡ ਆਈ ਐਮ ਫੈਟਰਡ, ਐਂਡ ਲੋ ਦੇਰ ਇਜ਼ ਨੋ ਅਸਕੇਪ, ਸੇਇਥ ਨਾਨਕ। ਓ ਲੋਰਡ, ਥਾਉ ਆਰਟ ਮਾਈ ਓਨਲੀ ਰਿਫਿਊਜ, ਨਾਉ ਸੇਵ ਮੀ ਐਸ ਥਾਉ ਸੇਵਡ ਗਜ, ਥਾਈ ਡਿਵੋਟੀ। ਓ ਮਾਈ ਲੋਰਡ, ਹੈਲਪ ਮੀ, ਹੈਲਪ ਮੀ, ਹਾਊ ਡਿਡ ਆਈ ਗੈਟ ਕੋਟ ਇਨ ਦਿਸ ਫੈਰਲ, ਵਟ ਸ਼ਲ ਆਈ ਡੂ, ਵਟ ਕੈਨ ਆਈ ਡੂ, ਆਈ ਐਮ ਸਿੰਕਿੰਗ। ਓ ਕਲਗੀ ਵਾਲੇ ਪਿਤਾ, ਸੇਵ ਮੀ, ਟੈਲ ਮੀ ਵਟ ਟੂ ਡੂ, ਹਾਊ ਡਿਡ ਆਈ ਗੈਟ ਹੇਅਰ, ਯੈਸ ਇਟ ਮਸਟ ਬੀ ਦ ਰਿਜ਼ਲਟ ਆਫ ਮਾਈ ਓਨ ਐਕਸ਼ਨਸ, ਟੇਕ ਪਿਟੀ ਔਨ ਮੀ, ਓ ਆਮ ਗੋਇੰਗ ਟੂ ਫੇਂਟ। ਆਫਟਰ ਅ ਵਾਇਲ ਹਰ ਕੋਨਸ਼ੀਅਸਨੈਸ ਰਿਟਰਨਡ। ਓ ਲੋਰਡ, ਸੈਟ ਮੀ ਫ੍ਰੀ ਫਰੋਮ ਦਿਸ ਹੋਰਰਬਲ ਪਲੇਸ, ਵਾਇਲ ਆਈ ਐਮ ਸਿਟਿੰਗ ਹੇਅਰ ਇਨ ਦ ਡਾਰਕ, ਆਈ ਕੈਨ ਸੀ ਮਾਈ ਹੋਮ ਇਜ਼ ਬ੍ਰਾਈਟ ਵਿਦ ਲਾਈਟਸ, ਮਾਈ ਫਾਦਰ ਇਜ਼ ਰਿਸਾਈਟਿੰਗ ਕਥਾ, ਐਂਡ ਮਾਈ ਬਿਲਵਡ ਮਦਰ, ਬ੍ਰਦਰ, ਸਿਸਟਰਸ ਆਰ ਆਲ ਸਿਟਿੰਗ ਲਿਸਨਿੰਗ ਟੂ ਹਿਮ, ਨਾਉ ਦੇ ਆਰ ਸਟੈਂਡਿੰਗ ਅਪ ਫਾਰ ਅ ਦਾਸ, ਮਾਈ ਬ੍ਰਦਰ ਸੋ ਸੋਫਟ ਹਾਰਟਿਡ ਐਂਡ ਸੋ ਡਿਵੋਟਿਡ ਟੂ ਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ, ਫਾਰ ਹੂਮ ਹੀ ਇਜ਼ ਆਲਵੇਜ਼ ਰੈਡੀ ਟੂ ਲੇ ਡਾਊਨ ਹਿਜ਼ ਲਾਈਫ। ਦਿਸ ਏਂਜਲਿਕ ਬ੍ਰਦਰ ਆਫ ਮਾਈਨ, ਹਿਜ਼ ਚੀਕਸ ਆਰ ਵੈਟ ਵਿਦ ਟੀਅਰਸ, ਦੇ ਆਰ ਸਿੰਗਿੰਗ ਨਾਉ, ਇਫ ਆਈ ਟ੍ਰਾਈ ਹਾਰਡ, ਆਈ ਐਮ ਸ਼ੋਰ ਆਈ ਕੈਨ ਹੇਅਰ ਦਮ। ਖੇਤ ਜੂ ਮੰਡੀਓ ਸੂਰਮਾ, ਅਬ ਜੂਜਨ ਕੋ ਦਾਓ। ਮੀਨਿੰਗ, ਦ ਗੋਡਸ ਹੀਰੋ ਹੈਜ਼ ਡਿਸੈਂਡਡ ਅਪੋਨ ਦ ਲਾਈਫਸ ਬੈਟਲ ਫੀਲਡ, ਨਾਉ ਇਜ਼ ਦ ਟਾਈਮ ਟੂ ਸਟ੍ਰਾਈਕ। ਆਹ, ਹਾਊ ਸਵੀਟ ਦ ਵਰਡ ਸਾਊਂਡ, ਦ ਵੋਇਸ ਫੈਲ ਸਾਇਲੈਂਟ, ਅਬਰਪਟਲੀ ਇਟ ਬਿਗੈਨ ਅਗੇਨ। ਵਟ ਡਿਡ ਆਈ ਫਾਲ ਅਸਲੀਪ? ਨੋ, ਆਈ ਐਮ ਸ਼ੋਰਲੀ ਲੂਜ਼ਿੰਗ ਮਾਈ ਹੈਡ, I don't know what I am babbling about. Is there no one to help me? Whoever heard of young girls being treated so badly? And what was my fault? I tried to help, and in return was taken away to be a slave. May God have pity on him who did this. Tanaguru, my faith will be me, will see me through all difficulties and suffering. So much time has passed since I was captured so treacherously. My hands were tied behind my back, and like cattle we were herded together, all the way from Khanna in Punjab to Kabul. How did we survive this arduous journey? Yes, there were other girls like me. At least we could cling to each other and share our tears and memories. But now, now there is no one. All have been sold, like animals. My father used to say that the child of man is the most valuable of all God's creations. But here she is sold cheaper than a donkey. It must be the Lord's will. But how am I to face all this? I have had no food or drink for the last 3 days. My stomach is paining with hunger, urging me to move towards the plate in the corner and eat whatever is in it. But how can I eat when I don't know what creature's flesh lies there? I am the daughter of a Sikh. I am a Sikhni. How can I eat this? But, O Lord, I am so hungry. Now I must be strong. Let life go if it will, but I must protect my dharm. And she hurled the plate away. Chapter 2. A young Sikh girl lay fainted with hunger outside a strange house in a faraway land. The people of the household waited for her to finish her meal and come inside. When she did not appear for a long time, one of the servants went out. Noticing her lying on the floor, he thought she was pretending to be asleep and began to beat her. The shock brought the half-dead girl back to her senses. With a scream, she got up on trembling legs, and shivering with fear and weakness, she managed to totter into the house. She was pushed into a corner where a pile of dirty dishes waited for her to clean. But she barely managed to get there before she fainted once again. Just then a young boy, the son of the master, came running and began to play with the servants. When he saw Satwant Kaur lying in a corner and being beaten by the servant, he ran across and, catching her hand, said, "Don't beat her." Then he bent down and helped her to get up. Holding her hand, he took her into his room. He brought a bunch of grapes from the fruit bowl and, pushing them into her hands, said, "Dear sister, eat these and don't cry." Then he went to his mother and told her about the servants beating the girl. The mother was moved and immediately ordered that Satwant Kaur should stay in her room and take care of her and her son. She was no longer to be a part of the menial staff. Satwant Kaur felt a little better after eating the grapes, but she was so worn out emotionally and physically that she dropped off to sleep where she sat. The next morning, the child again brought some grapes and gave them to Satwant Kaur to eat. When the mistress realized that she would not eat the meat cooked in their home, she arranged for her fruit and gave her permission to cook her own food. She was also allowed to visit a Sahajdari family who lived in the neighborhood. Satwant Kaur thus became free from the servant's tyranny and her life became easier. But she did not know the local language and was constantly afraid of displeasing her mistress and the young child. She did not, however, let this depress her and began to learn the language and soon became fluent in it. The mistress of the house, Fatima, was a very unhappy woman. She had no living relatives. Her husband was notorious for his debauched ways and did not treat Fatima well. As a result, she was looked down upon by friends and relatives. Even the servants did not show her the respect due to her as the mistress of the house. Fatima became very irritable and frustrated. The only one to arouse any soft emotions in her heart was her son, Ghani, with whom she spent her most happy and joyful hours. She noticed how loving and patient was Satwant Kaur and became very fond of her. During her bad moods, she relied on Satwant Kaur's calm and untiring support, and gradually a warm companionship developed between these two women of different cultures and faiths. Chapter 3. Fatima suffered her husband's ill treatment quietly for a long time, but then came a day when she felt she had enough. She went to the wife of the Amir of Kabul and told him the sorry tale of her husband's misdeeds. The Amir, on hearing this, immediately called Fatima's husband and reprimanded him sharply and ordered him to change his ways. This infuriated the Khan, who began to search for the source of his humiliation, and soon came to know that the complainant was none other than his wife. That evening he reached his haveli in a drunken rage. Drawing his sword, he entered his wife's bedroom. Luckily, she was still awake, and seeing the devilish figure of her husband, she screamed in fear. Satwant Kaur rushed into the room. Quickly assessing the situation, she ran behind the Khan and kicked his leg. Losing his balance, he fell flat and the sword flew out of his hands. Satwant Kaur promptly jumped on him and pinned him to the ground. Seeing her courageous action, Fatima quickly recovered and between the two they managed to tie him up securely. By this time the Khan was in stupor and began to snore loudly. The women sensibly opened the bonds before the Khan awoke next morning. Due to his drunken state, he did not remember anything about the previous night's events and left. At night, when he came home in his usual drunken state, the memory of his wife's treachery returned to fan his anger. But Fatima and Satwant were ready to ward him off his attack. The following night, the Khan did not return at all. His addiction to liquor had become so strong that even the fear of earning the Amir's displeasure was not enough to make him give it up. As long as his own wealth lasted, he could satisfy his thirst without any comment or criticism. But once he had run through that, he had began to dip into the treasury. His friends gradually turned away from him, and his enemies got the chance to inform the Amir. The Khan was arrested and put into lockup. His property and wealth were confiscated, but Fatima was allowed to keep the house and was given enough money to look after herself and her son. An inquiry was ordered into the Khan's misdeeds, and with the evidence collected, death sentence was passed on him. When Fatima heard this, she was horrified. She had never wished her husband any harm, even at the worst moments of her suffering. She belonged to the tough Pathan community, but was herself a soft-hearted person. Besides, company of Satwant Kaur had nurtured the loving and compassionate side of her nature. Fatima was at her wit's end. Who could she turn to for help? The only person who was close enough for her to confide in was the young slave girl, and she was in no position to help. But Fatima needed to unburden herself to someone. So she called Satwant Kaur and told her the whole story. Satwant listened patiently, trying to comfort her as best she could. She knew that they were helpless before the might of the Amir, but she felt that some effort must be made to find a solution. After thinking for some time, Satwant said to Fatima, "You know the Begum well. Why don't you go and see her? Maybe she can put in a word to the Amir and get him to spare Khan Sahib's life." With fresh confidence, Fatima went to the Amir's palace the next morning and begged the Begum to save her husband's life. After receiving the Begum's word that she would do her utmost to help, Fatima returned. But there was no peace in her mind. Satwant Kaur too spent the night racking her brain. In her heart, she was doubtful of any mercy being shown to the Khan, but she owed loyalty to Fatima and felt it was her duty to help her. Towards morning, a plan began to form in her mind. When Fatima woke, Satwant helped her to get dressed. As she was leaving for the Begum's house, Satwant said to her, "In case you find that no help is forthcoming, don't lose heart. Ask the Begum to get you permission for a last visit to meet your husband. I am sure Amir Sahib will not refuse that." When Fatima returned, Satwant could see that it was as she had expected. Amir Sahib had refused to listen to his wife's pleadings and was adamant that the execution should be carried out. However, the Begum had assured Fatima that she would definitely get her permission to meet the Khan one last time. Satwant Kaur went into her room and began to recite Gurbani, which was an important part of her morning routine. In the afternoon, Fatima called her and said, "Amir Sahib has granted my request. He has sent a message that I can meet my husband tomorrow, but I must go alone." Satwant Kaur replied, "Bibi, this is good news. I am sure whatever the Lord does will be for our good." Fatima says, "What good can happen now? All the doors are closed to me." Satwant Kaur says, "Bibi, don't lose hope. You have been good to me and given me kindness and love when I was suffering so much. I shall find a way to repay your debt, even if it means risking my life. Now don't ask me anything, but do what I tell you. Order a palkin with curtains to come in the morning so that you can reach the prison in full privacy." And so all arrangements were made. Chapter 4. Khan Sahib was in a dark cell. The intoxication of his drinking had long since vanished. His eyes were sunk deep into his skull and his clothes hung loosely on him. His face wore a look of deep dejection and shame, but it was too late, and though he felt penitent, he knew there could be no reprieve for him. He looked up as a palkin was brought and placed near the door cell. He knew his wife was coming for a last meeting with him, but he was astonished when shortly a beautiful girl got out and with quick steps entered the cell. She glanced around to see that they were not being observed and spoke quietly but firmly. There is no time to explain anything. Quickly, change into these ladies' clothes, and keeping your face covered, get into the palanquin. When you reach your house, take your family and find the quickest way to escape to Hindustan. You can discuss the details with your wife, but please be quick now." The Khan wanted to ask a number of questions, but the girl's insistence to hurry made him curb his curiosity, and quietly he obeyed her. In a short time, the guards returned, and unaware of the exchange, picked up the palanquin and carried it away after locking the cell door. The next morning, all preparations for the execution were made in an open ground. A big crowd had collected, and when the time came, guards were sent to fetch the prisoner. To their astonishment, they found a young girl sitting in a corner. Near her was lying a bundle of clothes. They called the jailer, who was also taken aback, and shaking with rage, shouted at the girl, "Who are you? Where is Khan Sahib?" The girl, Satwant Kaur, looked at them with a calm demeanor and replied politely, "I am the one who came in the palanquin yesterday. Khan Sahib left instead of me. Now that I am here, you can execute me instead." The jailer said, "This is outrageous. Oh, woman, you have dared to outwit me. You should be cut into pieces and fed to the vultures." Satwant Kaur says, "You are right, but I have repaid my debt and saved a life. Now you do your duty and take my life. I accept the punishment." The jailer said, "What? You want me to be responsible for killing a woman? Never. I'll never do such a thing. But what shall I tell my master? A seasoned jailer like me, outwitted by a scrap of a girl? If I kill you, I am a branded coward. If I release you, I am not doing my duty. And if I go and tell all this to my master, I shall look such a fool." Satwant Kaur says, "Don't worry, the order was for the palanquin to be brought in and taken out with all its curtains closed. How can you be blamed then? Tell the whole story as it happened. I am ready to face the consequences. I am not afraid to die. I am happy because I have saved a life. I received goodness from someone when I was helpless, and I have returned this in good measure." The jailer was astonished to hear these words. He thought for some time, but when no other way seemed open to him, he went to the Darbar and related the whole story to his ruler. The Amir was intrigued. "Who is this young woman, so courageous and self-sacrificing?" "Bring her here immediately," he ordered. The jailer left at once and soon presented the girl to the Amir, who asked her, "Who are you? And why have you risked your life in this manner?" Satwant Kaur says, "I belong to Punjab, and I am the daughter of a Sikh. Under your tyrannous rule, I was captured and, along with others, brought here and sold like cattle. I was taken to Khan Sahib's house, the same Khan who execution you ordered today. I was his servant, but served his wife, Fatima, from whom I received love and kindness. I am here to repay the debt I owe her, in the only way I can. Yes, I helped Khan Sahib to escape, but I am not a criminal." Amir says, "You are a very brave woman. You have done something not many would have attempted. Unfortunately, you are a Sikh, and so must face the consequences. But justice also demands that bravery is to be rewarded. What reward should I give to you?" Satwant Kaur says, "I don't want anything, but I would like to ask one question." Amir says, "What is that?" Satwant Kaur says, "Why are Sikhs treated so badly? Aren't they human beings?" Amir says, "Sikhs are humans, but they are dacoits, and they obstruct my invasion into Punjab. Also, they are kafirs, and so must be killed." Satwant Kaur says, "Sikhs are not dacoits. Your generals are the dacoits. They loot their subjects in Punjab with the help of their local governors. They are busy laying your whole kingdom to waste. The Sikhs, who are always trying to protect the common man, are unjustly blamed and killed. There is no one to listen to them, as those who are in position to dispense justice are themselves embroiled in wrongdoing. The rulers in Delhi have power, but like old lions, they are incapable of any action. It is not correct for you to have this enmity towards the Sikhs. They only attack the rulers if they are tyrants. Punjab is our homeland, our birthplace, and our country. You have no right to invade it, loot it, and rule over it. To protect their homeland from foreign invasion, the Sikhs rightfully fight you. I am speaking the honest truth, and I am not afraid because I do not fear death. It is in your own power to take my life, and I accept that. My only wish was to get a chance to convey my feelings, and I am glad I have had that chance. Now give the order to your executioner to wield his sword. The people were awestruck at the boldness of this young woman and her fearless words spoken so defiantly in the open court. The Amir sat, his mind full of conflicting emotions, anger, pity, and even love, at the daring of this slip of a girl. Turning to her, he asked, "You have shown immense confidence and intelligence. Tell me, how did you get captured?" Satwant Kaur says, "Amir Sahib, it's a sorry tale, but since you have asked, I shall tell you. One of your officers was galloping through our village when his horse stumbled, and the man fell into a well near a house. With the help of some people, my father managed to pull him out and looked after him for more than a week. When he became well, he set off for Ludhiana, which is a town not very far from our village. One day, my father received a letter from this officer saying, 'I am very grateful to you and your daughter for the care given to me. My wife wants to meet your daughter as she is lonely. Please send her.' My father refused. After a few days, this officer came to our village with his wife and made camp there. His wife began to visit us, and she and I became good friends. One day, when I went to meet her, they overpowered me and, taking me prisoner, left the very same day." Chapter 5. Satwant Kaur continued her narrative. "I learnt that the woman was not his wife, because she disappeared soon after. This villain then asked me to marry him, but before he could force me to do so, you gave orders to your soldiers to march immediately, and he had to leave to join his regiment. In the resulting confusion, I was left behind. But when your guards saw me tied up, they pushed me along with the other men and women you had captured to work as your slaves. I too was sold off along with others, but I didn't see that devil again till today." "Where did you see him?" Satwant Kaur, pointing to the Pathan officer standing nearby. There he is." The Amir turned furiously on him and abused and cursed him. "May you be damned in hell. Is this how you repay a good deed? May Khuda's anger rain down on your head." Turning to the jailer, the Amir then pronounced, "Spare this girl's life, but shoot this man at once." Satwant Kaur says, "Amir Sahib, stop a minute, please. By killing him, you cannot undo my sufferings. I have no more strength left. Please do me a kindness and take my life instead." The pitiable condition of a young girl touched the Amir's heart. In a soft voice, he said, "You have gained my sympathy, young woman. Ask me anything you want." Satwant Kaur says, "Please spare the life of my Fatima's husband, Khan Sahib, and don't punish the jailer. If you want to be still more generous, then please send me home to my family." Amir says, "I accept the first two requests, but I cannot fulfill your last wish. I don't think I shall ever find a more self-sacrificing girl than you. I shall relieve you of all your pain and suffering and make you my queen. All the riches and comforts will be yours to enjoy." Amir signaled to his guards, who promptly escorted Satwant Kaur to the women's apartments of the palace. A beautiful set of rooms was placed at her disposal, and a number of maids in waiting were appointed to serve her and take care of her every need. Satwant Kaur was quite unsettled by this change in her circumstances, but very soon the cloud of worry lifted and her face began to glow with a quiet confidence. Casually, she walked into her room and dressed herself in the rich silken robes and jewelry placed there. She walked around, inspecting all the rooms, ordering the maids to carry out jobs, and finally sending them out on various errands. As night fell, the Amir came to the palace. He was very happy to see Satwant in her new role. He sat down, smiling. One of the maids came in with beautiful flowers, and the Qazi walked in to perform the nikah, the marriage ceremony. Just then, thick smoke began to pour into the room. Everyone panicked and ran around to find the source of the smoke. Satwant, too, got up and rushed towards the door. When she opened it, flames leapt into the room, setting fire to it. Everyone began to scream and push, trying to find a way out. Taking advantage of the noise and confusion, Satwant Kaur escaped. After some time, when the fire was put out, the Amir asked about the girl, but no one could tell him of her whereabouts. Angrily, he ordered the servants and guards to search the whole palace and its grounds. The burnt section was so thoroughly examined, but not a sign was found. Finally, thinking that she might have run out in fright, the Amir sent out his soldiers, but they returned with only a half-burnt dupatta and a gold bangle, blackened by smoke. Meanwhile, Satwant had reached a lonely part of the town. Sitting on a stone, she began to review the recent happenings. She was taken aback at her own daring in setting fire to the palace. She had taken care to send away the maids so that nobody would be injured, and had managed to escape with ease. "Where did I get the confidence and the courage for all this?" she thought. "By God's grace, I have got out of one tricky situation. But what should I do now? How can I reach Punjab? Miles and miles of rough land, with thieves and dacoits roaming across it. It's not possible to make this hazardous journey on my own. Then what am I to do? Shall I go to Fatima? Will she help? Or will she hand me over to the Amir's soldiers? O Lord, guide me. Show me the way." Chapter 6. Satwant Kaur sat for a long time in deep thought. Finally, the only ray of hope being Fatima, she made her way there, planning all the while to get in without anyone seeing her. She found the large doors of the house locked and decided to wait until dark to try and get in. She covered herself completely with her shawl and wriggled into a niche in the wall, lying so still that it seemed as if a stone lay there. A couple of hours passed, and suddenly Satwant heard the sound of horses' hooves. She could see some riders in the distance coming this way and carrying flaring torches in their hands. She was sure they are Amir's soldiers. Her hiding place was not secure. She looked around desperately and spotted a dark outhouse surrounded by a high wall. Above it, a wooden beam extended outwards. Quickly, she tried her shawl and outer garments together and wrapped a large stone at one end. Then she flung at the wooden plank so that the rough rope of garments encircled it and fell back into her hands. Using this for support, she scurried up the wall and hid in a dark corner. Now she was completely invisible, but she could see the doors of the Fatima's house. In the next few minutes, soldiers arrived and knocked on the Khan's doors. Loudly, they inquired if a sick girl had been seen there. The occupants denied any knowledge of this, but the captain insisted on searching the Haveli thoroughly. They left after satisfying themselves that she was not there. Satwant Kaur stayed in hiding till dawn. As soon as daylight broke, she saw Khan Sahib leave with a number of guards carrying guns. A little later, two servants left for the market. Satwant Kaur knew the whole household well. She calculated that only the women folk were left inside. She climbed down from her perch and, wrapping a cloth around her head and face, bundling the rest of the clothes in her arms, she slipped inside. Taking care to avoid being seen by any of the maidservants, she reached Fatima's room. The little boy was asleep, but Fatima was awake. At the sight of the strange figure, she opened her mouth to scream, but Satwant quickly uncovered her face and signaled to her not to make any sound. Fatima was reassured to see Satwant, but puzzled because she had heard that the Amir had made Satwant his begum. Fatima says, "What are you doing here?" Satwant Kaur says, "I have come to you to beg for refuge, my mistress." Fatima says, "Why? Has the Amir thrown you out?" Satwant Kaur says, "No, I managed to run away." Fatima says, "But why? Why did you run away, leaving the riches and comforts of the Amir's palace?" Satwant Kaur says, "I am a Sikhni. I cannot give up my faith just because I am threatened by a tyrant or tempted by riches." Fatima says, totally astounded, "You are truly extraordinary. I have not seen another Indian slave girl like you. You are more faithful to your religion than even the mullahs and qazis, and your intelligence beats even that of Luqman. I can never repay what you have done for me. I shall forever and ever be grateful to you. Tell me, how can I help?" Satwant Kaur says, "I have not done anything. It was your own good luck that saved your husband. As you know, the soldiers are looking for me. Please hide me in your home in such a way that you and only you should know of my presence here." Fatima says, "Don't worry. I know how I can keep you safely here." Getting up from the bed, Fatima went into the adjoining room. One wall was fully paneled with wood. She pressed a knob and part of the paneling moved aside, revealing another small room. "You can stay here, Satwant. You will be safe because no one comes here. In fact, no one knows the existence of this room. It was made many, many years ago by my ancestors. I will come with your meals and spend my free time with you. And at midnight, when everyone is asleep, I'll take you out into the courtyard. Don't hesitate to tell me if you want anything. I owe you my husband's life and my family's happiness. He loves me now, and we have regained our lost respect and position in society. I can never do enough to repay you. I promise to take care of you and do everything in my power to see that you are safe and happy." Satwant Kaur says, "My dear, dear mistress, I am deeply grateful to you for your kind and loving words. I thank the Lord who has brought me to a safe haven. I promise not to trouble you, but shall quietly spend my time here. Some milk and grapes once a day will be enough for me, but be careful that no one gets an inkling of my presence here. Neither your husband nor your son, otherwise you and your family will be in grave danger." Fatima says, "Don't worry, the Lord is great and will protect us. Come, let me show you another door in the opposite wall. In case a time comes when you need to escape, open it and go down the tunnel which leads into the jungle on the city's outskirts. The mouth of the tunnel is blocked by a large stone, but when pushed from inside, it moves easily." Chapter 7. Satwant Kaur began to lead a life of confinement. Fatima took every opportunity to visit her and went out of her way to keep Satwant happy and comfortable. By a strange twist of fate, the roles of mistress and maid were reversed. Fatima was greatly puzzled to see how Satwant could remain in solitude for so many hours without feeling lonely, because she herself found it utmost impossible to be by herself for even a short while. The next time she went to Satwant's room, she asked her, "Don't you get tired of being alone?" Satwant Kaur, "Bibi, I am never alone." Fatima, taken aback, says, "But I've never seen anyone else here." Satwant Kaur says, "You are right, but the one who is with me cannot be seen with physical eyes." Fatima, scared and trembling, says, "Do you mean a ghost?" Satwant says, smiling, "No, my dear Bibi, not a ghost. My guru lives with me." Fatima says, "How is that possible?" Satwant Kaur says, "Bibi, I recite Guru's Bani, and my father used to tell me that where Gurbani is recited, with concentration and love, the Guru is present there. Gurbani thus becomes the visible presence of the Guru. Fatima says, how can Gurbani become the Guru? Satwan says, I don't know how, but we believe that Bani is Guru, and I too have felt that when I am reciting Gurbani, my spirit becomes lighter. I feel happier, and all doubts and pains fade away. I no longer feel alone, and thus realize the Guru's living presence everywhere. And that is why our daily prayer, we say, Sabta Hoya Sahai, in our Ardas, meaning, O Master, be ye ever with us. Our Guru is everywhere and ever ready to come to our help. I shall always be grateful to my Father for taking pains to teach me Gurbani when I was still a young girl. Without this gift, I would have never been able to survive the dangers I have been through. Fatima says, when I was a child, a number of holy men used to come to our house because my father enjoyed meeting them. I used to hear them talk, but I couldn't understand what they said and never asked my father. Did you ask your father to tell you about the Guru and teach you Gurbani? Satwant Kaur says, Bibi, we believe that it is our sacred duty of Sikh parents to teach their children all about their religion. It is not enough to take care of only the physical well-being of the children. It is ordained to teach them to be good and honest Sikhs as well. Hence, whatever I know is because of my father's efforts. Once I remember, he was very pleased with me. I can still see the smile on his face. I had completed writing by hand the full volume of Panch Granthi. It had taken me a year to do it. One of our neighbors was a widow. She was very keen to have it, and I gave it to her gladly. My father said, Satwant Kaur, when I look at you, I feel very happy and give thanks to the Lord. Later I learned that it is considered a very good deed to give a volume of Gurbani as a gift. Fatima says, yes, I can now understand why you are never overwhelmed by the events and are able to revert to a cheerful mood again and again, and that it is your faith that keeps you from feeling lonely. I too want to be able to share this joy with you. Is it possible that you can show me the way? Satwan says, yes, there is no secret in it, but you must prepare yourself. Fatima says, I'm ready. Satwant Kaur says, then I suggest that you learn one line of Gurbani with its meaning every day. If you find that you enjoy doing this, then try to memorize it. Along with that, analyze yourself, and whatever faults you find in yourself, try to get rid of them. In this way, you will become more loving and caring, and not only feel happy yourself, but be able to spread joy to others as well. Fatima responded very enthusiastically and began to learn the Japji Sahib. She had some difficulty in pronouncing the words correctly, but she persevered and after some weeks learned the complete Japji and with Satwant Kaur's help also learned the musical way to recite it. As she became more fluent and regular, Fatima began to experience the same joy and feeling of well-being that Satwant Kaur had spoken about. She began to look upon Satwant Kaur as a holy being and her spiritual teacher. Satwant Kaur was filled with shukr, gratitude that is, in spite of living in confinement, far away from home. The Guru had granted her all comforts and the company of a good person, Fatima, who was now sharing satsang with her. Chutat nahi kot lakbahi. Naam japat teh paar parahi, anik bigam jeh aaye sangharye, har ka naam tatkal udhariye, anik jon janme marijam, naam japat paave bisram. Hau mela mul kabho na dhove, har ka naam kot paap khove, aisa naam japeh man rang, nanak pyaye saad ke sang, tan guru, tan naam, Dhan Gurbani, meaning one is saved not by millions of friendly arms, but if one dwells on the Lord's name, one is saved. Where myriads of crosses assemble to destroy you, there the Lord's name saves us in an instant. If one is circling the rounds of births and deaths, by dwelling on the Lord's name, one finds eternal rest. We are impure, impurity leaves us not, but the Lord's name destroys millions of sins. Meditate thou with love on such a name, which one finds in the society of saints. Chapter 8. Fatima's husband had earlier married a second time. The woman whose name was Zainab was extremely beautiful. Her character and background, however, were not. Khan Sahib had fallen for her looks, and she used all her wiles to encourage him in his life of dissipation. Her unending demands for jewelry and other luxuries had brought about his downfall. Gurbani warns us, Surat dekh na bhool gawara, mitha muhara jhoot basara, meaning, don't be misled by a person's looks, as physical beauty does not always mean that the soul is equally beautiful. It can lead to one being caught in a web of lies and deceit. The Khan had now realized the true worth of Fatima, who had remained loyal and faithful to him throughout. He stopped visiting Zainab and only sent her money every month for her needs. Zainab felt extremely aggravated and began to plan how she could take revenge on Khan Sahib and Fatima. A cunning old woman, Sayyid, had been in Zainab's employment for a long time and was completely in the confidence of her mistress. She was sent to join the staff of Fatima's household, which she managed to do. In a short time, Sayyid took over most of Fatima's personal work and in this way managed always to be near her. Fatima told Satwant Kaur about engaging a new maid, but she did not pay much heed to this. It was only when she found Fatima singing the old woman's praises at all times that Satwant's sixth sense began to give warning signals. She felt there was something odd about a new maid becoming so close to her mistress in such a short time, and some of the things Fatima told her about Sayyid somehow did not ring true. One night when Fatima and her husband were talking in their bedroom, Satwant Kaur quietly left her room to go out for some fresh air. In the dim light, she saw Sayyid lurking near the bedroom, listening to the conversation. Without making a sound, Satwant Kaur slipped back, and the next day she told Fatima that it was not safe to keep Sayyid in the house and that she should dismiss her. Fatima was not willing, but at Satwant's insistence, she talked about this to her husband. Khan Sahib too was very pleased with Sayyid's work and scoffed at Fatima's pleas. When Fatima continued to urge him, he asked the reason for wanting to send Sayyid away. Fatima had no convincing reply to give, so after a little discussion, the matter was dropped. Sayyid had listened to this conversation also and was dismayed that Fatima was becoming suspicious about her. She couldn't understand this, as she was always very cheerful in all she did and said. One thing puzzled Sayyid. She noticed that during the day Fatima disappeared for long periods. She could not be found anywhere in the house, and none of the servants could give any information when Sayyid asked them. Her curiosity was aroused and Sayyid began to trail her mistress even more closely, but without success. One night when everyone had gone to sleep, Sayyid crept up to Fatima's door and waited. Towards midnight, she heard the mistress get up and go to the other room. On silent feet, she followed. It was pitch dark, and she could see nothing, but she heard the sound of a door opening and closing, and then there was silence. Satwant Kaur spent her days patiently, but at no time did she accept this room as her home, where she could safely spend her whole life. Memories of her family, the peace and joy of satsang, the singing of kirtan, which was done in secret to avoid the attention of the aggressive rulers, tugged at her heart at all times. She was constantly making plans to return to her homeland and praying to the Akal Purakh to make it happen soon. She had asked Fatima to get 2 sets of men's clothing made for her. She felt that if she traveled disguised as a man, she would be less conspicuous and thus safer. Meanwhile, Sayyid was sniffing around to find the secret of Fatima's strange behavior. One day she hid herself under a bundle of clothes in the room with the secret door. In the afternoon, when Fatima quietly entered and opened the secret door to meet Satwant Kaur, Sayyid saw everything. In the next few days, she watched carefully till she was sure she could open the door herself. The next night, she tested the key and was satisfied when the lock opened. But she waited till early morning before going in. It was still dark when she entered the secret room. She could see the faint outline of a figure sitting cross-legged and hear the sound of soft breathing. But she could not make out whether the person was a man or woman. She continued to peer, but when the figure moved suddenly, Sayyid quickly retreated to the outer room, closing the door behind her. Satwant Kaur was extremely worried. When Fatima came later to meet her, she found Satwant Kaur ready to leave. "What happened?" Fatima asked. "My staying here has become dangerous for both of us, so I am leaving," replied Satwant Kaur, and she related the night's events to Fatima. Fatima said, "Who could it have been?" Satwant Kaur says, "Bibi, even though I have not met or seen her, I am sure it was your new maid. All along, I have felt that she was not a good woman and would harm you in some way." Fatima says, "Yes, I agree. It must have been Sayyid. When you told me earlier to get rid of her, I did try, but Khan Sahib is so impressed with her devotion that he did not agree, and I did not want to go against his wishes." Satwant Kaur says, "I do understand, but for the sake of peace in your home, you must get rid of her. Well, I must go now. I don't want Satwant to see me here again." Fatima says, "No, please, don't talk of leaving. I can't bear the thought of it. Wait, I have an idea. There is another room like this one, a little further ahead. You can safely stay there." After a little discussion, they decided that for the present, this was the best place. Sayyid was now convinced that she had found the right weapon to destroy Khan Sahib's love and trust for Fatima. Finding him alone, Sayyid went up to him and began to whisper, "My lord, a strange man lives in your home, and your wife visits him every night, but you know nothing about it." Blood rushed to the Khan's head, and putting his hand on the sword, he shouted harshly for Fatima. Hurriedly, Sayyid went to fetch Fatima, but she could not find her anywhere. This was better than she had expected. She was sure Fatima was in the secret room with a strange man. Now was the time to take Khan Sahib there and catch her red-handed. She rushed back to Khan Sahib and said, "Come with me, my lord. Let me show you proof of what I said." Boiling with rage, Khan Sahib followed Sayyid, who opened the secret door. But her triumph was short-lived. The room was bare. She rushed around trying to find some sign of the occupants, but there was none. Khan Sahib retraced his steps, his thoughts in turmoil. Anger at Sayyid was mixed with feelings of shame and chagrin. He turned on Sayyid and scolded her soundly. Then he went to look for Fatima. As soon as he entered the bedroom, he saw Fatima sitting on the mat, praying. In a fit of remorse, he moved towards and caught Fatima in a tight embrace. He then proceeded to tell her the whole sorry tale. Fatima reminded him softly, "My lord, I had requested you earlier to dismiss this woman. She is evil and a troublemaker." Khan Sahib immediately went out and gave Sayyid her marching orders. Thoroughly disgruntled, Sayyid left, and her departure was a source of great relief for one and all. That night, when the whole household was lost in sleep, Fatima got up and went as usual to meet Satwant Kaur. She was shocked to find the room empty. In a panic, she began to search, but there was no sign of Satwant Kaur. The thought that she would never see her again was too much for Fatima to bear, and she fainted. For quite some time, she lay on the floor. When finally she opened her eyes, she found that her head was in Satwant Kaur's laps, and she was sprinkling water on her face to revive her. With joy surging in her heart, Fatima sat up and held Satwant Kaur in a warm embrace. Then she asked, "What happened? Where did you go?" Satwant replied, "Bibi, I was very upset by the incident with Sayyid. It made me realize that to continue to stay here would threaten your happiness and even your life. I'm not worried about myself, but why should you suffer for giving me refuge?" Fatima says, "But who will you find? But who will find out? Sayyid was the only danger, and she has gone. The other servants are deeply loyal to me." Satwant Kaur says, "True, but nature's ways are strange, and one's most carefully made plans can go awry. That is why I went to check out the tunnel which leads to the jungle. I walked through the trees for a short while. The whole place is deserted. But then I heard voices. Two guards were talking, and when I crept nearer, I realized that they were discussing me. It seems the Amir is not entirely convinced that I perished in the palace fire. So he has announced a reward for the person who finds me. I did not wait to hear more, but quickly returned to find you lying here." Fatima says, "You are a very brave woman." Satwant Kaur says, "Life is not always a great teacher, and the experiences I have gone through have made me tough." Fatima says, "I feel that now more than ever. You must go now. For the present, this is the safest place for you." Satwant Kaur says, "I realize that, but one can't always think of one's safety. I desperately want to see my parents." Fatima says, "You plan to return to Punjab? Don't you think that's an impossible dream for a young girl with the whole army looking out for her?" Satwant Kaur says, "Yes, I know, but I cannot give up. Again and again, my heart urges me to go and not to worry about the consequences. A Sikh girl learns to face danger with fortitude." Fatima says, "My dear, your courage is remarkable. Whenever our soldiers used to come back after one of their raids in India, they used to tell us about the valiant community called Sikhs, who faced danger with a smile and fought the enemy with tenacity and determination. We used to laugh at them for making up such stories. But after meeting you, I have realized that they only spoke the truth." Satwant Kaur says, "Bibi, I don't know what to say. We have no kingdom, no forts, no land or wealth. The whole panth lives with a single-minded belief in the Lord. And to uphold this faith, it faces untold dangers and vicious attacks and earns the praises from its worst enemies." Fatima says, "How true. I have seen this with my own eyes." A rustling sound interrupted their conversation. Hurriedly saying goodbye to Satwant Kaur, Fatima left. Satwant Kaur was already dressed in male garments. Now she too quickly went through the passage and out into the woods. Chapter 9. A short distance away from the town of Kabul, two young men sat talking. They were wearing red turbans. The first man says, "What shall I do then?" The second says, "Dear brother, I don't know what to say." The first says, "Can't you borrow it?" Second says, "I have tried." The first says, "I will have to go without food then." The second says, "Yes, I know, and it worries me. Why don't you come here every day?" First says, "I would if it wasn't so far. Can't you give it to me for just 5 more days? That's all I need to learn it by heart." Second says, "I know, and I have pleaded with my father, but he won't let it out of his sight." The first says, "Then hide it from him and smuggle it out." Second says, I wish I could, but it's kept in a steel box with a heavy lock on it. A young lad, who was standing nearby and listening to their conversation, stepped forward and greeted them with folded hands. The young lad says, I am sorry to interrupt, but I couldn't help overhearing. From your talk, it seems that you want a volume of Gurbani, Panch Granthi. I can help by writing it out for you, if you can bring paper, pen and ink. I know Japji Sahib by heart, Hazare De Shabad, Rehra Sohila, Sukhmani and Asa Diwar. The young man's face is lit up with joy and hope. You are a blessed soul, come down from heaven to help us. We shall forever be under your debt if you can do this favor for us, they said gratefully. The lad says, no, I am no angel from heaven, but a brother Sikh. It would be an honor if I could do this service. The first young man was Tota Ram, who was eager to become a Sikh, and the second, Mangal Singh, was his friend and guide. He had taught Tota Ram Gurbani from his father's Panch Granthi. But as these volumes were scarce, his father had taken it back and locked it safely away. Tota Ram, who was very disappointed, now cheered up and looked at the lad as a godsend. They decided that he should take the lad home with them and arrange for his stay till the writing was completed. Before they parted, Mangal Singh tore a piece from his turban and gave it to the lad to wrap it around his white turban. The law of the land demanded that all non-Muslims should wear red turbans so as to be easily recognizable. Tota Ram and his companion reached his village. The lad was given a small room in a quiet corner of the house and supplied with paper, pen and ink. In a beautiful, clear script, the lad began to write the Gurbani, and within a month the volume was complete. Tota Ram was extremely happy. He could now resume his nickname and recite the part regularly. In due course, he partook Amrit and became a Singh. The young lad, whose name he said was Jaswant Singh, and who was none other than Satwant Kaur, disguised as a male, continued to stay there to produce more handwritten volumes of Panch Granthi. The demand was immense. The large amounts of money were offered. But Jaswant Singh continued to write in return for only food and some clothes. Soon his name became a household word in the whole of Kabul. One day, an elderly businessman fell seriously ill. He asked his son to fetch someone who could recite Sukhmani to him. The son brought Jaswant Singh, who recited the part so beautifully that the old man was thrilled. His condition began to improve, and within a short time he recovered. He grew very fond of Jaswant Singh and asked him to stay with him so that he could hear Sukhmani every day. A few days passed and the old man asked Jaswant Singh, how can I repay you? You seem to have no desires, no ambitions, but I want to do something for you. Jaswant Singh says, I do have one wish, but as it cannot be fulfilled, I don't like to talk about it. Old man says, what is it? Tell me. Jaswant Singh says, I have in my heart a deep longing to go to Punjab. The old man says, is that all? You know that caravans go to Punjab every month. You can go with the next one. You will get enough time to visit Amritsar and have darshan of Harmandir Sahib before its return. Jaswant Singh says, but I won't be coming back. The old man says, oh, then what will I do? I have come to depend so much on you. Jaswant Singh says, why don't you come with me, Babaji? You too have been waiting to go to Amritsar. The old man liked the idea and spoke to his family. At first they objected, as he was too old, but finally agreed when Jaswant Singh promised to take good care of him. Chapter 10. When Fatima next went to meet Satwant Kaur, she was shocked to find the room empty. Taking an earthen lamp, she went down the tunnel and, pushing the rock aside, came out at the other end. She saw that the dirt on the ground had been recently disturbed and knew that Satwantkar had really gone. The pain of never again seeing her dear friend and guide, whom she had come to love and respect, was more than she could bear. With dragging feet, she returned to her room and sat down listlessly. She could not respond to her son's childish prattle, nor did she reply when her maids came for instructions. She tried very hard to control her grief, but her thoughts went again and again to Satwantkar, causing her tears to flow afresh. Many days passed, and Fatima tried to gain peace and strength by reciting Japji Sahib, which she had learned from Satwantkar. But worry for her friend's safety and her own sense of loss continued to pierce her heart. A few days later, Khan Sahib went off on tour. One night, as Fatima lay asleep, she felt someone shaking her arm. She opened her eyes to find Satwantkar sitting on the edge of her bed. For a moment, she thought she was still asleep and dreaming. Satwantkar spoke softly. "Wake up, Fatima Bibi. You are not dreaming. I am really here." And they clung to each other. "I was trying to find a way to return to my country," Satwantkar told Fatima. "When I overheard a plot being hatched against you, I managed to find the tunnel opening and came to warn you." Fatima looked frightened, but Satwantkar continued in a reassuring tone. "You have to be strong now. This is the work of your old enemy, Zainab, who has hired a band of robbers to attack your house tonight, loot all the valuables, and kidnap you. Some time back, she had sent another old crone to work as a servant in your home. This woman, Hasna, has been told to open the main gates after midnight to let the robbers in." Fatima went pale with fear, but rallied as Satwantkar's words, "You are a Pathan and must act like one. There is no time to lose. First of all, we must get rid of Hasna. Take her to one of the strong rooms and lock her in. Then send one of your trusted servants to the police camp to bring some men to guard the house. Don't forget to send some money for quicker results." Fatima hurried to Hasna's room and shook her awake. "Hasna, why did you go to sleep so early? You forgot to bring the glass of milk for the little one, and he is crying." Hasna got up, apologizing, and brought the milk from the kitchen. As she was crossing the courtyard, Fatima came up to her and took the glass from her. "Give this to me, and you run down to the safe room. Bring my jewelry box, as I want to keep it in my room tonight," Fatima ordered. Hasna ran down the steps, and Fatima and Satwantkar quickly banged the heavy door shut and locked it. Hasna began to shout, but quickly became quiet when she heard Fatima say, "You can sit there and enjoy the fruits of your treachery." Satwantkar now outlined the rest of the plan to Fatima. All the servants were aroused and called into the courtyard. Fatima told them, "I am feeling very frightened as Khan Sahib is not here, so I want you to put on all the lights and go about your chores as you do in the daytime." The servants were very devoted to their mistress and willingly obeyed her every command. Soon the sounds of a normal household activities filled the air. Satwantkar then asked Fatima to show her the room where all the weapons were kept. She picked up the heavy guns and began to load them. When it was past midnight, the robbers became restless. Neither had the household gone to sleep, nor had Hasna opened the gates. They had told Hasna that they would announce their arrival by hooting like an owl. But to their chorus of hoots, also, there was no response. Fatima heard a strange sounds and became very nervous. She slipped into the tower room where Satwantkar sat keeping watch. This room had niches cut into the thick walls. Through these gaps, shots could be fired without exposing the person to the enemy. Satwantkar signaled to Fatima to come up to the gap and look outside. Fatima looked and immediately stepped back when she saw five or six sinister figures lurking in the dark. Satwantkar whispered, "I can take care of these thugs. If they dare to make a move, I shall fire. The sounds are sure to scare your servants and create a panic, So it's better that you go and explain the whole thing to them. This way they will be prepared and remain alert. Fatima looked at Satwant Kaur with amazement and respect. Such an intelligent, fearless and resolute girl. She is fit to be a queen, she thought. I have everything, yet I feel so afraid and helpless. But she doesn't let anything crush her spirits. With these thoughts running her mind, Fatima went to speak to her servants. The robbers now became impatient with waiting and decided to take action. They rushed at the gates to break them down. At the sound of the loud thump, Satwant Kaur shouted a warning, "Stop, or I will shoot and kill each one of you." But the robbers paid no heed and rammed into the gates once again. Immediately Satwant Kaur fired, hitting one of them in the leg. With a yell of pain, he fell off his horse. This stunned the others momentarily. They looked hard to see where the shot had come from, but could see nothing. Two of them picked up their guns and stood guard, while the others began to hammer at the gate again. Another shot rang out and hit one of them in the arm. Those keeping watch began to fire back. Fatima softly entered the tower room where Satwant Kaur sat fully alert, her eyes shining with excitement. "We need to attack from both sides," she told Fatima. "Tell your servants to go into the opposite room and start shooting arrows at the attackers." Fatima quickly picked up some bows and a batch of arrows and went and instructed her servants accordingly. In the next few moments, while Satwant Kaur loosened off one shot after another, arrows rained down upon the thugs from the other side. This completely unnerved the robbers, and quickly turning, they fled.